No one says it like they do.
So my question to the people of Boston is, what are you, nuts?
Felger and Maz, 98.5 The Sports Hub.
Our coverage all this week is brought to you by Harbor One Bank. This hour of the program is brought to you by Cambridge Savings Bank, which is my official bank. We'll take your calls the entire final hour here on the program. Thanks for joining us, as always, here on 98.5 The Sports Hub, FM dial in Boston. Simulcast has followed us as well on NBC Sports Boston. You can catch us across New England and the country. And catch us anytime, 24-7, on the stream on the 98.5 The Sports Hub app. Download that at your app store. You'll catch us whenever you want. And even if you miss something, the podcasts are up there as well. So if you miss a show, a segment, an hour, you can always catch up. That's the deal. All that's taken care of. Back to the phones, as promised. Here's Max in the truck on the Patriots defense. Go ahead, Max.
Hey, guys. Thanks for taking my call. I'm not really worried about the Patriots defense. I think James Harrison's going to have a huge game for this Patriots defense. The guy's an animal. I mean, he was working out at 3:45 this morning. Like, I mean, I think he's going to bring the pressure, and I think Nick Foles is going to fold. Thanks for taking my call, guys.
Okay, man. If you're banking on James Harrison, I don't love your chances.
Well, you know, it's funny. So the last couple of days, Greg Bedard, because I'm with you mostly, but Greg Bedard's been going to some of these games that the Eagles have played this year and trying to find areas where the Patriots could benefit from watching some of the opposition from this season on Boston Sports Journal. And today he posted the late season game against the Giants, and he talked about how the left tackle, Hawaiian dude whose name I can't pronounce, had a tough time holding off Olivia Vernon in that game. And this could bode well for James Harrison.
Okay, so look, I think James Harrison, like he was in this last game, you know, situationally in a spot, obvious passing situation.
How did Foles do in that game, Mark?
Did a lot of good things in this game. Struggled throwing the ball deep and outside the numbers. Expect the Patriots to make him move to prove he can do just that.
4 touchdowns, no picks.
They're also the Giants who had given up at that point in the year, but they also blew this game that they led 20-7 at one point because they dinked and dunked them to death and also ran up tempo, and the Eagles had a hard time putting up with that. And that's exactly what the Patriots do.
Okay, but Maz is talking about the other side of the ball.
Yeah, it's all right.
Either way, if you're banking on James Harrison, I think that's a mistake. If you're saying he can, you know, in spot duty and, you know, clean up some things, yes. But, you know, he ain't playing 80 snaps. He's not that kind of guy.
No, he's not going to be dominant, but in spot, you know, spot plays, he could come up big.
Tony in Stoneham. Hi, Tony.
Hey, guys. How you doing?
Good, man.
I got a couple of stories that aren't around the Boston area on the two quarterback trades. Before I get to that, Murray, go to YouTube. Patriots never cheated. There's an 8-minute video by an Arizona fan with videos and excerpts out of the rule book that covers that. I don't want to talk about that now. The first one, Bissett was traded to Indianapolis to piss off Brady because Indianapolis is the team that called them out. The second one is Garoppolo. Belichick became very good friends with Shanahan's son, and he called him up and asked him if he wanted Brady for a second-round pick, and the deal was done.
So, Tony, these have been floated before, and when we talked to Jay Glazer, he had an interesting sort of thought about why they didn't shop Garoppolo, and he said they don't shop anyone. And then he went through these trades, and he said when they traded Jamie Collins, they didn't call anyone. They had a deal with Cleveland. They knew they had a deal with Cleveland, and they just shipped him to Cleveland. He said when they traded Chandler Jones to the Cardinals, they didn't call anybody else. They didn't shop that pick. They felt they had a deal with the Cardinals and a match with the Cardinals. They didn't want other people knowing their business, so they just did a deal with the Cardinals. He said they never shop these things. There's never an auction on any of the things that they do. They just want to deal with one or two teams, keep it under wraps, and do it that way, which might be true. I don't know. I mean, I don't remember them shopping Chandler Jones, or if they did or not. I have no idea.
I don't remember it either.
But if that's the way that they go about that, I would still say, why? Why? What do you care? Why are you so paranoid about people knowing your business or not? If it can get you a higher draft pick, who cares? Like, I think they're wrong to treat it that way.
Well, see, I think, you know, to me, there aren't many times Belichick trades a guy he wants to keep. So, like, I separate the two. I look at it and say, well, Jamie Collins was addition by subtraction in Bill's mind. Mankins, he wasn't going to pay, so he buried him in Tampa. Seymour, he wasn't going to pay, so he buried him, sick of him, so he buried him in Oakland. Maybe Chandler Jones, they weren't going to pay, and they were getting sick of him, too, so he buried him in Arizona. I mean, more often than not, it feels like he stuck him in bad situations. Garoppolo's the one real difference. Like, Garoppolo's the one where you say, you know, did he put his affection for the player or his desire to see the player succeed ahead of the good of the team? In the other cases, you can always say...
But Jay's point was is that they didn't maximize their asset on any of those cases.
Okay, but in the other cases, you can always say they were looking to bury the player and that was worth something to them,
That's
too.
Why they took a little less. I got you.
Right? So they're looking to bury the guy. They want to stick him somewhere and that's it. So there was a different value in that deal for them. But in this one, what value? What? Why do they care if Garoppolo's good?
Believe me, I just think it was almost negligent.
Either he didn't want to do Jimmy dirty, right? Or he looked at it and said, ultimately it serves me if the kid plays better. I want him in a good environment.
Either way, to not even pick up the phone from the Cleveland Browns to me is just, it's unconscionable. It's unconscionable. Here's Travis in New Hampshire. Go ahead, Travis.
Yeah, I was just wondering, you guys were talking about the Patriots defense, how it's going to be the worst ever in a Super Bowl, and how they're 31st, I think you said, in DVOE. Say the Patriots do go on and win Sunday. What does that say about the importance of defense, and is it really just about the quarterback?
Yeah, so what I think it says, Travis, is how can the Patriots win a championship with ranking 31st in this DVOA stat? It speaks to how down and injured the league is. Yeah. What it says to me is that that's an aberration. You're not going to see many teams win a championship with a defensive ranking like that. But if it's a year where you're the last one standing that's healthy and normal, I mean, if everyone else had a quarterback injury or was just a mental case like the Pittsburgh Steelers, and you were the only team that stayed healthy at the quarterback position and didn't lose your marbles.
And I still think that they had two tremendous injuries. I thought they were going to ultimately trip them up in Edelman and Dante Hightower, and it hasn't. So to me, if they win it with this bad defense, okay, you're the best of the bad. I'll still be happy, but I still don't think their defense is all that good.
See, I'm a defense guy. I am. I mean, if you remember the year that Seattle played Denver, and Denver Manning had the 55 touchdown passes, and I liked Seattle in that game. I just, to me...
But they were all world that year.
But again, nobody felt it at the time, Murray. Again, it's a little bit of revisionist history because everybody was talking about that Denver offense. Everybody. And the Seahawks weren't quite yet the Seahawks. I'm telling you, Murray, go back and look.
Yeah, well, I know how I felt at the time, and I bet the Seahawks, and I was right.
Well, then, for once, you were on the right side.
Stay tuned for more Felger and Mass on 98.5 The Sports Hub. Now, more Felger and Mass, live from Radio Row at the food court at the Mall of America. Hey, fries are ready. Thanks to Harbor One Bank.
We have something truly unique in this league. 8 of 12 teams that didn't make the playoffs before. Two of the four championship teams that played in the championship game were in last place and went to first in their division and went to the championship game. That's extraordinary. And I think that's great for our league. What I think it does say is the incredible achievement that the Patriots as a team, as an organization, have achieved. It's really remarkable that they're in and going for their third Super Bowl in 4 years. In this kind of a system where keeping that group together, changing whatever they need to change, whether it's players or coaches, or they do that in a way and still create success. I just think that I marvel at that. I think our other clubs marvel at that. I think fans marvel at that. And I think the balance of having new teams with teams that continue to find ways to win is a great thing for the NFL. And I think it's a great thing for our fans. So you can continue to win, and then also there are teams that can surprise you. And I think that's what makes our game special.
He didn't really answer. I mean, he kind of answered it, but I think the Patriots are better than the Jaguars here from a league perspective, but there's a lot of other matchups that the league, I think, is looking for. And it's not just an anti-Patriots thing. They just want some fresh blood and some really important national teams if they were here. Like if the Steelers were here instead of the Patriots, the league, I think, would be better off. The Cowboys were here, the league would be better off. If the Packers or the Raiders or any of these teams were here instead of the Patriots, the league would be just fine with it.
Yeah, I think they're happy with this, though. You get star power with this, and you have an angle. I mean, either people are passionate about them like they are in our region, or they hate them and they want to see them knocked off. I still think it's good for the league that the Pats are here.
It's better than the Jaguars.
In the short term, it is.
Do you think the league's better off if the Steelers are here or the Patriots are here?
Steelers.
Yeah, probably the Steelers because it feels like the Pats are here every single year.
Yeah, and yeah, you know, I'm not saying swap out the Patriots with Tennessee or some nothing team. I'm talking about, I mentioned Oakland and Pittsburgh, like important national, maybe even Kansas City to a certain degree. You know, teams with big followings and historical followings. I mean, those are the teams that, I mean, that's what it should be. But none of those teams can stay healthy or keep their act together.
See, but I think the league's starting to turn a corner there. Like, you know, you're starting to get some interesting young quarterbacks in the league. And, you know, Wentz is obviously one of them. Deshaun Watson's another one. And I know it's early on him. We were saying similar things about Dak Prescott a year ago. But who knows? Mahomes maybe in Kansas City. Like, these are guys who were drafted with the intention of being centerpiece guys. And, you know, it feels like maybe, once Brady's out of the picture, you could see the game handed over to a bunch of younger guys, with the exception of Rodgers, obviously.
All right, we continue with your phone calls. Andrew's in Peabody. Hi, Andrew.
How you doing, fellas? So earlier you were mentioning how this year's defense isn't nearly as good as defenses in years past as far as Super Bowls teams go, and I 100% agree with that. I think the one thing they do got going for them is they don't allow a lot of points. They pretty much play conservative D and try to make you beat them in the red zone. And the other thing was, I think if you're banking on anybody to win you this game on the defensive side of the ball, it has to be Butler and Gilmore. We've gotten beat on the outside too many times this year through the air. Then you can focus on the middle, which is, I think Murray just brought up, where they've had success, or at least when Foles is playing, stop the threat, which I think is Ertz. Ertz, Celek, Aguilar. If you can do that, let Tom Brady and the offense do their thing. I think I'm totally fine with how the offense is going to play, and that's how we got to win the game.
Okay, Andrew, do we feel good or bad about the Patriots secondary?
I don't feel great.
You don't?
No, I feel pretty good about it. Pretty good.
I think Gilmore Jeffrey's a good matchup for the Patriots. I think that's a matchup that works for them.
Go ahead, Maz. I'm sorry.
I was just saying, I think that one could go either way.
See, Gilmore's about the only guy I do feel confident about, because I think everyone else has been, mostly a negative, especially Malcolm Butler. I mean, McCourty's pretty steady, but it's been a down year for him, right? We can agree on that. And Pat Chung at times is, it's Gilmore and everyone else, I think, is one big question mark. And I think it's completely opposite. I think if you get a big game out of guys like Trey Flowers and you're disrupting, Nick Foles, you maybe get a forced fumble there. Like, I think it starts up front with guys like that and Adam Butler.
Okay, we've got Sam in Maine. Hi, Sam. What do you got for us today?
Hi. I was just wondering the injury status on Alan Branch. Will he play Sunday?
I don't think so. Even if he's healthy, I feel like he's out.
Yeah, that's been the talk, right? I mean, he's been limited with this knee for the better part of, since that Miami game. And
when I say out, I mean, I just feel like he's out of the mix.
Yeah.
Like, he's just not...
Persona non grata.
Even if he's healthy, he's out, he's done, it's not his year. You know, maybe you'll see him next year, maybe you won't. He's always been a very sneaky, hidden, loose cannon. Like, because he's a nose tackle and, sort of buried in the defense. People don't really understand what an impact he has when he's playing well. And people don't really understand that he's kind of a knucklehead.
Yeah, the talk has been, even if he's good to go, they're like, we're good.
Exactly. So I think Alan Branch is no. And, Malcolm Brown, Bedard was comparing Malcolm Brown to Vince Wilfork last week against Jacksonville. So if Malcolm Brown's taking over and is doing the job inside, great.
Yeah, well, Bedard loves the fat guys.
Oh, my God, does he?
but this is a game they could use Branch, because I think that Phillies would like to, probably will control the interior of the line. And Branch, a guy like Branch could make a difference. I was reading some of that stuff yesterday. Philly's been the best first down team in the league. And so I think that that's a critical thing. Look how the Jacksonville game went. Once Jacksonville started getting conservative on first down, now it became second and long, third and long. The Patriots could blitz. Bortles couldn't handle it. And I think you might be facing a similar thing with Foles, that if the Eagles can get yardage on first down and get themselves into a second and, five, second and four, third and two, then all of a sudden it limits some of the things the Patriots are going to be able to do on defense.
No question. That's what Jacksonville did.
I mean, to me, that's a huge thing.
So, and Maz is referring to stats that were handed off. There's always people walking around these things, these Super Bowls, with data services or stat services or whatever, just like all sorts of random stuff. So a guy dropped this off yesterday, Remarkable by Inside Edge. Okay, I just want to give him a plug. Inside Edge, I guess it's a stat service. One of the first things that they put in their fact sheet here about the Super Bowl, the Eagles, as Maz just mentioned, the Eagles have rushed for 1,074 yards on 216 carries on first down this season. That's 5 yards per carry. That is the best in the NFL. The Patriots have allowed 5 yards per carry on first down in the league this year. That ranks 32nd out of 32 teams, which is fascinating. It didn't feel to me like the Patriots have gotten run on first down that much, but apparently they've allowed more yards per carry on first down than any team in the league, and the Eagles are the best rushing team on first down than any team in the league.
So the answer to that, though, is okay, if you're the Patriots, put extra guys in the box early. But the Patriots tried to do a little bit of that against Jacksonville, and it opened up play action, and the Jags were able to throw.
Let me tell you, that if the Eagles come out here trying to run on first down, they are stupid and they are going to get blown out.
See, I think that they're smart enough to know that they can throw on first down.
You know, I think half the time the Patriots give up yards on the ground because they let you. Go ahead and hand off. Neat. Gain your 5 yards and kick your field goal or punt. Go ahead. Like, they don't load up. I guess you said they did a little bit against Jacksonville, but for the most part, they're like, we got Brady. We're scoring 30. If you're 5 yards a carry, if you think your 5 yards a carry is going to get you to 30 points, you running back nerds, dorks, Murray, then you'll lose. So Philly wants to go ahead and hand it off. We get your 5 yards per carry. Can you get to 30 points doing that?
No, I don't think, no. And I don't think they're going to do that. I think that, again, you'll see them throw conservatively on first down, some short passes, and maybe some of those slants that they threw in the Minnesota game, or some balls to the running backs a little bit and try to get 4, 5, 6 yards on first down. The critical thing to me is, and I think there was even a stat deeper in that stat packet you were looking at about overall on first down. The key thing to me is Philly's got to stay out of second and long and third and long. Because if the Patriots can start blitzing like they did in the Jacksonville game, and it's not something they ideally want to do, but if they can do that, I think Philly's in trouble.
Here's Sean in Marlboro. Hi, Sean.
Hey, guys. I have two thoughts on these conversations that you guys are having. And the first is with Kraft. I hope that he doesn't look at Brady and the $3.6 billion valuation on the Patriots, plus their annual revenue, and make the business decision based on, you know, what would the path be worth if it wasn't for Brady? Maybe $2 billion, you know. And, you know, so that's my first thought that I'm worried about. My second, with the Brady versus Montana conversation, I think something that people overlook is the best talent versus the best career. Like, there's an example. If you look at a couple of running backs, who was the best running back and who had the best career? Jim Brown, Barry Sanders, Bo Jackson, or Emmitt Smith? You know, so I mean, I think that, like, if Montana stayed healthy, would he have had a better career and therefore been looked at as the better talent?
Maybe. I don't think Montana was more talented than Brady.
They're pretty comparable,
yeah,
actually.
You would say neither was the most talented guy, pure talent-wise, at their position, but they were so
smart.
Their head and their heart and their balls were just, you know, so exceptional that it made up for whatever deficiency. Like, you know, Marino was a better passer than Montana, and maybe Manning was a better passer than Brady, but who was a better player when you include everything. So I think Brady and Montana are good comps in that regard.
Yeah, because I'm not sure Montana was a great deep ball thrower. Like, you know, similar to Brady.
Yeah, he didn't have a rifle arm.
No. He was extremely accurate and could process like nobody, and other than Brady, right? I mean, they're very similar in a lot of ways.
Here's and no one, even someone like Mad Dog Russo, who wants to do it, no one is giving you Montana over Brady anymore that I know of. No one. Not Maz, not the dog, not anyone.
I mean, the resume is just too big. It's too big.
It's over. Mike in Hampton Beach. Hi, Mike.
How's it going, guys?
It's going good. What do you got?
Hey, so if the Pats win this, I don't see either Belichick or Brady going anywhere. Because they're going to be coming back next year going for a three-peat, which has never been done. And you know they're going to that's something they're going to be shooting for. Also, as far as the jerseys go, I personally would have liked to see the red throwbacks. I think that would have been cool.
Can't go throwback in the Super Bowl. I don't think Brady and Belichick are going anywhere if they win, lose, or draw. Or we have that meteor strike and the whole game's canceled. Like, they're not going anywhere. I mean, I felt that from day one. I felt all their issues have been real, and they were all sorts of pissed off at each other in the middle of the year, but I think it's all going to be taken care of in the offseason. They're all going to be back. I mean, that's why I felt from day one.
I'll tell you, though,
I also still feel they messed up the Garoppolo thing royally. They should be sitting here right now today with the fourth overall pick. All they had to do was answer the phone from Cleveland, and they right now would have the fourth overall pick. Cleveland was willing to give you that Houston first rounder that they had, and you'd be sitting here at number four in the draft. And that's the one I won't ever get over.
I'll tell you, the idea of them winning three in a row, like, obviously they get this game to play yet. But it is astonishing that there is still stuff out there that they haven't accomplished. Like, you know, it is, and that is enough to motivate them.
So no,
because they think that way.
No one's ever won three in a row, right?
That's correct. Right. So, you know, if they pull this off, like, I could totally see them say, okay, well, now we have a challenge again.
And Robert will come up with the new slogan.
Yep.
It's time for the three-peat.
Three-peat with me.
Unequivocally.
Three-peat after me.
Michael Felger. Tony Maserati. Felger and Maz. It's Felger and Maz on 98.5 The Sports Hub. Follow these guys on Twitter at Felger and Maz.
Hey, Patriots fans, are you still struggling to find reasons to hate the Philadelphia Eagles?
Yeah!
Well, struggle no more, because Felger and Maz have got you covered.
Learning to hate them, learning to hate the Philadelphia Eagles.
Yeah, you know why I hate the Eagles?
Tell me, bro, I need more reasons to hate.
They're nothing but soft rock trash. I need a band that gets me cranked up, brother, like Ozzy.
Wait, I thought we were talking about...
Hotel California, Desperado, the bland harmonies of Witchy Woman.
Bro, I really don't think we're talking about the same thing.
No, I know exactly what I'm talking about. I hate these Eagles and those Eagles.
Yeah, the Eagles and the Eagles.
Yeah, and I don't like the BC Eagles either.
Oh, yeah, I forgot about them, too. Should have put them in there.
All right, so if you needed more reasons, we're giving them to you here on Felger and Maz. We'll wrap it up with your phone calls here before we hit the final word from Minneapolis. Here's Billy in Lakeville. Go ahead, Billy.
Hey, how you doing, guys?
Good, Billy.
You know, they should make a movie about Tom that lies, not Tom, this great Tom. I mean, a lot of these Patriots fans are not going to like this. But let me tell you, he lied about Deflategate. Okay, I'd love to see the movie, how the heck he got the footballs from the bathroom across the field into the locker for Tom to test them, then he could make them okay to get them into the referee's hand. Okay, that's one lie. The other lie is that he sat there and said, oh, I love you, Garoppolo. He had his jockstrap packed and he had his plane ticket to San Francisco and he bought it for him. Then he went over to Kraft and said, hey, you know what? I like you, and I thank you for getting rid of the future of the franchise for his personal gain. I think it's wrong. He shouldn't have done it. He hurt the future of the whole franchise by putting his two hands in and getting Belichick fired. I mean, Belichick's going to leave now because of this, and this is terrible.
Okay, so let's wait for Belichick to leave before we blame Tom for that. But that it does sound like an interesting documentary brought to you by Dan Shaughnessy and Ron Borges.
Tom versus lies.
Co-executive producers Felger and Maz.
And I think he left out the worst transgression. To me, the destruction of the cell phone is the most damning thing on Brady's resume. And in the middle of that story, the destruction of the cell phone, ooh, like, you know, that's a big one.
So we're not exactly getting that from the current Brady documentary? But I like it. I like the current Brady documentary. I haven't seen the fourth installment. That was today. I watched three last night. As usual, I'm behind on everything. But I think it's been a good product. I've gotten good insight. I don't think it's been too much. It hasn't been too heavy on the TB12 stuff. It really hasn't, Maz.
No, I agree. The first episode, the second half of it, was a lot of TB12. And since then, I told you, it's been a lot of football stuff, which is good. And I'm okay with some of the grab ass of him and Edelman, because I think Edelman adds to this documentary.
I thought that was good stuff.
It was good stuff.
Found, you know, like,
because Edelman has personality that Tom doesn't.
Yeah.
No, and I'm not criticizing Brady for it. He is who he is. He's intense. He's driven. But that often can mean a shortage of personality. And Edelman can bring that out in him. And Edelman has it. So it adds to the product, the entertainment product. And the fourth episode, which I did watch today, was largely family-based. And, you know, so there's a lot in there about his parents. And so, you know, you had disagreed with me earlier in the week about it humanizing Brady. And this episode really humanizes him.
Yeah.
And so, you know, it's about his relationship with his mother. And his father's got this memorabilia room in his house. And he's still sort of interacting with his kids on the trip to China and all of that stuff. So, you know, there was a clear focus in this episode of trying to humanize Tom Brady.
How much Giselle do we get?
She's a little Giselle in there, too. And I would say, you know, again, objectively speaking, thus far, she's the most annoying part of the whole thing. Now, look, she is who she is, right? And I'm into the football stuff. I don't need to see him running in the sand on the beach, and I don't need to see Super G. I can live without her.
How about the lip kissing from the men in the Brady family?
Okay, Murray.
Well, we don't need to go too far. It's just different.
He's taking heat for this.
He shouldn't. Why is he taking heat for it?
So now, look, the idea that a guy would kiss his son, to me, is absolutely nothing wrong with that. Now, the mouth-to-mouth thing is...
They're lip kissers.
They are. They're lip kissers.
Some people are lip kissers.
Yes.
Some people are cheek kissers.
Cheek kissers.
Some people don't kiss their dad whatsoever.
My dad and I are cheek kissers. To kiss my dad on the lips...
I ain't kissing my dad on the lips. But other people are different. Other people are lip kissers. And this, I can tell you, Brady's always been a lip kisser with his dad, man.
Yeah.
He and his dad will lip kiss.
And this says, by the way, I
forget my kids. My wife won't kiss me on the lips.
Right? When's the last time you got a kiss out of your wife?
Yeah,
that doesn't happen.
I just want to say, that, please, that has nothing to do with any kind of homophobia. It's just like dads eat gross. Like, I don't want to have like.
Well, your dad, maybe Tom Brady eats nothing but, you know, pure vegan flower petals. And I don't know. I'm just, I guess people have noticed this, that they're lip kissers. This is nothing new, folks. The Bradys are lip kissers. I ain't kissing Rocky on the lips.
I'll tell you though, I say this in all honesty.
That's my dad.
The fact that he is, not Balboa. Kissing the statue in Philadelphia. The fact that he is affectionate towards his sons, I think is one of his real strengths. I do, and I say that with all the.
Yeah, it feels like genuine affection towards his kids.
It is. He loves his kids, and whether they're boys or girls, he's going to show affection, and I give him credit for that.
Okay. But the documentary that I think you're really going to like is tonight. And so, we know, we've been saving up our sound on it and our thoughts on it because it's been embargoed. We've all seen it. Most people in the media have seen it. The Bill and Bill 30 for 30. What do they call the thing?
The two bills.
The two bills on ESPN 30 for 30. It runs about an hour and a half or so. So it's a big, meaty chunk on just one of the great sports stories of our lifetime. And that is the whole drama of Parcells, Belichick, Patriots, Jets. It goes deeper than that. It goes a lot into their Giants years. But the stuff that you can really sink your teeth into is really digging deep into the border war and Parcells and Kraft and buying the groceries and going to New York and Belichick coming back here and that whole thing. It's just, mwah, it is outstanding.
I liked it too, yeah.
I think. And I think there's a lot of meat on the bone. I think there's a lot of stuff that you can sort of apply to today's situation with the Patriots and Belichick and Kraft. And I think Robert Kraft gives you some hints on some things that have been going on this year in that 30 for 30. I'll tell you exactly what I mean tomorrow when we're allowed to play the sound. But that's tonight. I don't know when it is or is on ESPN or ESPN2. I don't know. Check your local listings. Watch the thing. And we'll talk about it tomorrow. For those of you old enough and who lived through all the Parcells stuff here.
What a great time it was. I mean, a great story.
And it's a story that was dying to be told. Parcells and Belichick, I guess, had not sat down for an interview together since 1991. Since, I guess, after that Bills Super Bowl is the last time they actually sat down together. And so just having them in the same room and talking about it is it's fascinating. It's tremendous. So we'll get into that tomorrow.
And by the way, that interview that they did together, if I'm thinking is the right one, there are also clips of it in this documentary.
Parcells
was interviewing
Belichick.
That's
right.
Correct.
And you know what? So I'll just give you a little giveaway. Parcells bugs me in this thing because I think Parcells is still not giving Belichick his due. Parcells is still treating Belichick like his little do boy. Parcells does not acknowledge what Belichick accomplished without him. Parcells does not acknowledge how many times he screwed Belichick over. And this is another indication of it. Parcells goes to interview Belichick while he's in the NBC booth. And immediately, Belichick turns around and starts asking Parcells questions like Parcells is the one that demands the attention as being the subject. Did you notice that?
Absolutely, I did. In fact, I said it to someone the other day. The interesting part of that scene is that Parcells is supposed to be the interviewer, and it ends up being Belichick interviewing Parcells.
Because Parcells isn't going to lower himself to treat Belichick as the subject and Parcells being the lowly media guy. So immediately it's like Parcells has to flip it around. And Belichick starts asking him questions.
See, but you're a Belichick guy more than a Parcells guy. You just need to acknowledge that.
Parcells treats Bill like a bitch.
Okay, but you don't like Parcells.
But that doesn't. No, I love him. I'm just telling you how Bill Parcells treats Belichick.
I know, but you have a Belichick bias in this.
No, I don't.
Sure you do.
I mean, I like Belichick.
Because you were closer to Belichick than Parcells.
That has nothing to do with this.
At one point you were.
But that has nothing to do with this. You don't think Parcells treats Belichick like a bobo?
I think he did. I think in this episode, he tried at some points to apologize for the way he treated him.
I didn't see it.
Oh, I still think it's evident that he's like, you're not on my level. I mean, at the end.
Absolutely right.
Spoiler alert, and I'm not going to ruin it, but in the last 10 minutes, do you find out that these two really care for each other? Yes, there's a bond there.
Not really.
But it's still evident throughout this thing that Parcells is like, yeah, you done good, boy.
Is some of that, no question.
Oh, and there's so much body language thing where it's still just. Like, it's now 15 years later. Belichick has been to 8 flipping Super Bowls. It's obvious what Bill's accomplished and what he is in his own right. And I still feel like the whole tenor of the thing is like, well, the Belichick Patriots way is really the Parcells way. And they brought all these Parcells guys over from the Jets when they first got going. And Parcells says a lot of the things that we did, you can see him doing now. It's still like Parcells is grabbing credit for the Patriots run and not giving it to Bill Belichick. And Belichick's just sort of sitting there and taking it.
See, I didn't feel that way.
I do.
I didn't feel that way. Again,
part of that, not to cut you off, but I think part of it is.
But I'm probably more of a Parcells guy than I am a Belichick guy.
I'm not taking sides. I'm just telling you.
I'm just telling you the reality. I'm not taking sides either.
I think it's Belichick's respect for chain of command. He talks about it. You know how much he respects the military, and I still think even if there's some bad feelings or the bad feelings have maybe dissipated, but he looks at Parcells and is like, he's still the boss.
No, this is what Belichick's sort of like a abused domestic partner, almost. Like, that you know, that syndrome where you keep coming back. Maybe I'm not putting this properly, or it's an inappropriate analogy, but like, I feel like Bill has been abused by Parcells, yet still sort of goes back to more and gravitates towards him and just takes more punishment, as opposed to saying, hey, you know what, Bill, F you, I'm better than you. Like, why am I still getting this treatment from you? Belichick never really does it.
No, but again, I just think Belichick has reached such a level that maybe I just looked at it differently than you did. To me, this thing was more about how
Belichick's being gracious.
Belichick was gracious in this.
Too gracious.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, you know, there's a scene at the end, and I don't want to ruin it for people, where the producer or director asks a question that I was certain Bill Parcells was going to answer first, and Belichick answered it first. And it told me a lot. Told me a lot about who Belichick really is deep down and who Parcells is deep down. You'll just have to watch it and wait for it.
So it's really a great take. So give it a watch. We'll talk about it. We just talked about it now. We couldn't wait. We'll do more of it tomorrow with some sound to reinforce what we're talking about. Final word comes your way next. Again, I want to thank our friends at Cambridge Savings Bank for sponsoring this hour of Felger and Mass from the Super Bowl.
You're listening to Felger and Mass on 98.5, the Sports Hub.
No one says it like they do. Like they do.
So my question to the people of Boston is, what are you nuts?
Felger and Maz, 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Felger's expert analysis.
Not from this talk radio crazy.
Maz's hard-hitting questions.
What am I, like the freaking abrasive police here?
The callers bringing knowledge to the table.
Maz, the adults are talking.
It's time to recap this four-hour show in 4 minutes. It's the final word on Felger and Maz on 98.5, the Sports Hub.
And the final word is brought to you by Town Fair Tire. If you're looking for the best deal on tires, only one place
nobody
to go.
Mark.
That's Town Fair Tire.
Nobody.
The best prices and great free services. Nobody beats
nobody.
Town Fair Tire. Nobody. That's how I know you're back and no longer hungover, because yesterday you couldn't even get through that.
Oh, I didn't even remember it yesterday.
No.
It was all
over.
Oh, brilliant.
No way.
Chris Mad Dog Russo, SiriusXM fame, joined the show for his yearly Super Bowl appearance today. And in honor of that, here is a best of the doggy.
Belichick.
It hurts Belichick. There's no way around it. It hurts Belichick. Now, it's a team thing and a Belichick thing. You know, Belichick's not Lombardi, all right? What Belichick did was wrong. From a legacy perspective, a lot of people think Belichick's Lombardi. I'll buy that. If you lose this game Sunday, I don't want to hear about Lombardi, because Lombardi wouldn't have lost this game, not two in a row to the same team. We know that Belichick's going to the Hall of Fame. We know Belichick's a Hall of Fame coach. Nobody's denying that. If Belichick loses to Manning and Coughlin again, where do I put Coughlin? For Brady and Belichick to have to win, and Coughlin outworks Belichick.
I don't look at it that way, and I'm not from Boston. So, to me, Belichick's still an all-time great. I think it serves Belichick right. Listen, Belichick's a great coach. He coaches me anytime he wants. Was he 74-1 Belichick in New England with a lead? Belichick's a great coach.
Belichick. I would say Belichick. Belichick's going to the Hall of Fame. Brady, Belichick. You trust Belichick? Respects Belichick? Forget Belichick. They're due to lose a game. I mean, you know, even the great Belichicks, you know, sometimes you lose a game.
Brady or Jordan?
You know, Brady's got Belichick. Now, again, he's also won six. Brady's got a chance to do that here. Belichick. I would say Belichick. Belichick's going to the Hall of Fame. Brady, Belichick.
Oh, that is so good, Jimmy.
So that's like 3 or 4 years of
that.
That
is every year he said Belichick on our air.
That is awesome.
You're listening to Felger and Mass on 98.5, the Sports Hub.